It's time for Fed Talk, the live show for feds in the know. From federal agencies to Capitol Hill, the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth bring in experts from across the federal community to bring you inside the issues. Fed Talk is meant to provide general information about legal issues. However, the views expressed in this program are not intended to provide legal counseling. Listeners are cautioned not to rely upon any statements made in resolving legal issues they may face, but instead to consult with their own attorney about specific situations. Attorneys are not engaged in providing legal services while appearing on the program and are not responsible in any manner for the consequences that may stem directly or indirectly from reliance on any statement made during this program.
Good morning and welcome to Fed Talk. I am Tony Vernetti from FEDS, our Federal Employee Defense Services, and we have a great show for you today. Actually, we're going to be doing two shows in one. You know, why do one show when you can do two, right? So for the first part of the show, we're going to be talking with Dexter Brooks, my good friend Dexter, from the EEOC's Office of Federal Operations. Dexter is, of course, the director of the federal sector programs over there at the EEOC, and he is here to tell us about the EEOC's Executive Leadership Conference that is coming up here in Washington, D.C., at the Washington Hilton in September, on September 17th. Good morning, Dexter. Thanks for spending some time with us this morning.
Good morning, Tony. I'm glad to be here. Thank you for the opportunity.
Absolutely. And then a little later in the show, I will be joined by Kathy Sands from WIFL, or the Women in Federal and Law Enforcement. Kathy is the president of WIFL, and she will be joining us to talk about their upcoming leadership conference that is also here in Washington, D.C., in a couple weeks, actually, the week of August 25th. Just a reminder that Fed Talk is brought to you by GEICO, where 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance. For more information on GEICO, go to geico.com. And so, Dexter, let's start with having you, I always like to have you introduce not only the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, but specifically your office, the Office of Federal Operations, the office that's in charge of the EEO programs for the federal sector, for our listeners.
Yes, thanks, Tony. As most of your listeners may know, the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, which we just call EEOC, is an independent federal agency with the mission to eradicate employment discrimination in all segments of employment. And within the EEOC, we have a five-person commission. The commissioners are presidential appointees, Senate confirmed. The president can have three commissioners of his or her party, and then two have to be from a different party other than the president's. And then the president will designate the chair of the organization. So our current chair is Jacqueline Barian, and a real big supporter and advocate for employee rights. And beneath the commission, we have offices. So we have Office of Field Programs that manages our 53 field offices around the country, you know, just like other agencies, Office of Information Technology and things of that nature. In our 53 field offices, we hear cases of discrimination where if a person believes that a state, local employer, or private sector employer has engaged in unlawful discrimination, they can come to one of our field offices and initiate the charge process, which includes mediation, investigation, potential conciliation, and if we can't resolve it, we litigate cases in federal court. And so that's where most of our staff is located throughout the country, doing very hard work, over 100,000 charges filed every year. One thing we don't do in terms of a litigation strategy, so sometimes you'll see cases about EEOC versus Waffle House, EEOC versus Coca-Cola, EEOC versus Walmart, EEOC versus Walmart, EEOC versus Walmart, and EEOC versus Walmart. Every once in a while we're throwing a Target case just to throw them off. But the reason why, and that's not to say Walmart's a bad employer.
I guess Walmart's not a sponsor of our show today.
Yeah, and this is not bad because Walmart's not a bad employer. Not to say that they have issues just like any other employer. Walmart just happens to be the second largest employer in the nation. And with that number, you're going to end up having human conflicts that may, you know, culminate into EEO matters. The largest employer in the federal government, in the nation, which I already gave away, is the federal government. So we have a different strategy. We don't have an enforcement litigation alone strategy with the federal government. We actually try to work with the federal government to be the model employer. And in that vein, we have an office that's just dedicated to federal employment issues, and that's the office that I work for, the Office of Federal Operations. And even though we have an administrative complaint process where federal employees can bring complaints of discrimination, we on an equal side and resources we give to trying to help the federal government through guidance, through data, through our training and outreach efforts that we're going to talk about later on in the show, and through reports and evaluations. And so in that mix, we really try to partner with the federal government to model what employment should look like for the rest of the segments in our nation.
So before we talk about some of those training initiatives and that outreach that we want to talk about today, we should also mention that this year is also the 50th anniversary of the Civil Rights Act, which is the landmark piece of legislation, that was established to eradicate discrimination throughout our country. And I know the EEOC is doing a lot of stuff about that this year. But tell us about the Executive Leadership Conference that you all have planned. And I know this is the third or fourth year doing it. The idea behind it's a little bit different than the traditional conferences or trainings that you would think of the EEOC putting on for folks in the federal sector.
Yes. Well, the Executive Leadership Conference, and this year, the Executive Leadership Development Training that we're doing is a one-day event we're doing this year, September the 17th at the Washington Hilton. And the logic behind it, and it's not a typical EEO conference where we come and talk about issues of harassment, discrimination, reasonable accommodation. One of the big things we're looking at now is pregnancy discrimination. It's not to focus on those substantive topics. We have other outlets to provide information on that. One of the things that we do in terms of we're trying to make the federal government a model employer is to help those that lead EEO programs and agencies to be the organizational leaders necessary to facilitate change, cultural change, and the things that the challenges that they face. So this conference and this training is specifically targeted to leaders of EEO and HR programs who don't necessarily make the day-to-day decisions, but should be those who are influenced and are persuasive in getting their leadership to do the things that's going to create equality of opportunity. And at some agencies, the Civil Rights EEO director and the folks that's responsible for diversity and inclusion programs don't always get, and it's not to vilify agency because times are tight, they don't always get leadership development training that's focused on their needs. While they're supporting the mission and they're helping lead change and trying to be persuasive and influencing and things of that nature, we try to find a way to get them the training they need so they can be successful change agents within their organizations. So while some of our conferences you see at EEOC are very substantive on EEO topics, this is really dedicated to our key stakeholders, the leaders of EEO programs, to try to get them the developmental need they need to be successful within their organization.
Right, and it's not so much singling out the EEO offices that they're not specifically getting this type of training. You know, it's more so, you know, just like lawyers, you know, other subject matter expertise that grow up in their agencies and become leaders, and, you know, as they advance, you know, they do so because of their, you know, their subject matter expertise. You know, in this arena, we're talking about, you know, their knowledge of the EEO laws, statutes, you know, the different programs, diversity. But, you know, and I can say this having been, you know, a lawyer and a supervisor in the federal government, as you grow up in there, you know, no one's taught, you know, we get there, no one's taught you how to be a leader. No one's taught you you know, the skills, you know, that you need to get the most out of your employees. And that's kind of where the idea for this conference came about, right?
Yeah, and let me add, and no one prepared you once you make it to senior leadership in the federal government, whether it be in an EEO program, a general counsel's office, and other offices, for the constant change dynamics that are in the federal government. You know, every 4 years we have elections, we have political appointees that come in, and they will have different points of view and different objectives, and that changes the way that we manage our programs. So it's a fluid environment of change, and we haven't always prepared our leaders for that. And so this conference is really trying to focus on those things we need to be successful in the everyday environment that we face in the federal government.
You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm here speaking with Dexter Brooks from the EEOC's Office of Federal Operations, and we are talking about the EEOC's upcoming Executive Leadership Training Development Conference. That's going to be September 17th here in Washington, D.C. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion with Dexter and talk about the courses that we have lined up, that they've got lined up for this year's training event.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around a mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is GEICO anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that GEICO isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like GEICO. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. GEICO.
To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact GEICO today to request your special federal savings.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Tony Vernetti, and I'm talking to Dexter Brooks from the EEOC's Office of Federal Operations, and we are talking about the EEOC's upcoming Executive Leadership Development Training that will be here in Washington, D.C., September 17th this year. It's a one-day training event. For more information on it, you can go to the website, which is www.EEOCLeadershipConference.com. That's EEOCLeadershipConference.com. And Dexter, why don't you tell us a little bit about the workshops that we have planned? It's a 1 day event. You know, it's here. You know, in Washington, D.C. And you guys really have a lot packed in this 1 day.
Right. Past conferences have been 3 day conferences, but because of, you know, budget issues and things that happened in the last couple of years, we decided to do a 1 day event, but really pack it with the things that our leaders need. And as we were talking about the things that EEO managers, HR managers face with day to day, we have a variety of presentations we think are suited for their development. We have a keynote speaker we're very excited about, Anish Chopra. And Anish Chopra, and Mr. Chopra was the first chief technology officer for the United States government. When President Obama came on board, they created the new position of chief technology officer, and Anish served as the first. And it was really looking at how do we embrace technology in the federal government. It lines right up with what we're doing in the EEO and diversity programs. It's to how do we use technology, data, and information to tell a story? How do we collect data that's going to help us better serve the nation? And Anish has really looked at and studied these things from a large global perspective in terms of federal government. He has a book out called Innovation State, and in that book he offers a look at how open government can establish new paradigms for the internet era and allow us to tackle some of the most challenging problems in a cost-effective way. And so each participant that comes, they will hear this great presentation on technology and how it can help them in improving their programs, and they will get copies of Anish's book, Innovation of State. In addition to Anish, we have many other workshops that we're offering. We're offering a great workshop on leading a 21st century workforce offered by Mary Abajay. And Ms. Abajay gives a very good detailed presentation of what this 21st century workforce looks like in terms of, in federal government, we have diminishing public support. There's been, you know, a lot of, negative comments made about federal government. We have shrinking budgets, changing demographics. We have these multi-generational workforces.
Yeah, it's also the first time you got five generations working side by side together, and that brings its own special challenges that I know Mary's going to talk about.
Yeah, and so she's really synthesized a lot of this information to help leaders understand what they're facing today and then the opportunities that these challenges bring in this workforce. We also have our good friends from OPM's Federal Executive Institute that offers such a great variety of training for federal leaders. We're going to have Fletcher Homan really focus on how to lead change, and that's a key element for our stakeholders, these leaders of EEO programs, because they're constantly leading change, and they're offering it to new leaders every time new leaders come in. So Fletcher's going to offer them some good strategic planning on leading change.
And if I could, Dexter, it's, you know, if you complement the two courses you just talked about with the leading 21st century workforce and then Fletcher's course about leading change, Mary's course is more about, you know, embracing it, recognizing it, you know, what are the things you can do with it to do your job better. And then we switch to, you know, what Fletcher's going to be talking about is not so much about how to embrace change, but it's understanding when change and that change is necessary, and how do you lead that change in your organization? You know, how do you lead, you know, that train out of the station so that you can effectuate, you know, those changes that are needed? And as we all know, people hate change, right?
Yeah.
And that's some of the hardest thing, you know, that I think managers in the 21st century have to do.
Yeah, totally agree with you, Tony, and thanks. And then the final workshop we'll have is from someone within our own community, Claudia Postal, and she works at the National Science Foundation, and she's a member of the Senior Executive Service within the National Science Foundation. And she's going to talk about the Senior Executive Service. How do you get there? And then how do you succeed once you're in the SES Corps? And Claudia, really, as a person who's lived it in a civil rights EEO program, is really going to help our participants understand the process it takes to get to the SES Corps and then what to expect once you're there.
And I know that's a particular course that's near dear to you, Dexter, and kind of, you know, the idea of where this training development came about is, you know, is how to, you know, get your EEO leaders, you know, to the top levels of the government, the top career levels of the government, how to stay there, how to advance, you know, and how to make yourself, you know, better, not just get there and sit back and relax.
Yeah, one of the things I think that we've recognized as a community over the years is that the approaches you take to proactive prevention of discrimination is different than the approaches you take to combat discrimination on the charge or complaint side, because that's a more compliance area. When you're trying to facilitate change, you need different skill sets. So it's, over the last decade, we've watched organizations where we've seen the civil rights directors and EEO directors really facilitate change, and we try to benchmark what are some of the things they did, and they really became organizational leaders, explaining how this betters the organization. How does this better accomplish our core mission? And with those skill sets and the understanding of equality of opportunity in those programs and marrying those two, we found these leaders have been more successful in facilitating the types of changes we need to really make the laws that we have in effect. Because the laws are not just laws to put out there to punish people. The laws are out there in part to give guidance and create a proactive means to effectuate equality of opportunity. So a lot of the sessions that you're hearing about in the workshops that we're offering is really trying to get to those core leadership competencies needed by a leader of one of these programs to really effectuate this organizational change that's necessary.
And the other thing that's different about your conference that I'll just quickly mention is by bringing the leaders in the EEO community together to learn, you know, these leadership skills together is important because you have your own unique challenges, you know, the unique challenges within your office. You know, often the EEO, you know, programs, diversity programs are sometimes, you know, seen by other offices, you know, as barriers to getting the job done and things like that. You know, so by bringing people together, they can share experiences, you know, ask certain questions that maybe other folks haven't thought about. And it's just a really, you know, great collegial environment. You know, one of the things I want to just quickly mention about Anisha's, speech that I've, having read his book, it's just government used to really be the leader, in technology, over the years. It's just in the past 20 years, we have so much technology that it's just, it couldn't catch up. And we have all these legacy databases and the modernization, of that has just... been very difficult, for the government, to catch up to. And Anish really has, as the first chief technology officer, has really wrote the playbook, on how, governments can really adapt, and embrace, all these changes that are out there to do better for the taxpayers, who they are serving.
Right. And Anish falls right in line with what we're trying to do in terms of being a better proactive community in terms of collecting data through technology. Even at EEOC, we had several different systems for collecting data from federal agencies, complaint data, workforce data. We got data from OPM through their central personnel data file, all these different sources, and then, put them into different vehicles. And through the leadership of this administration and the technology initiatives that's been put forward, we created a new system that we're really trying to embed in our community where we're collecting data in a more organized way and then pushing data so agencies can use. So we're really excited to have Anish give his perspective to our community because it really furthers one of our key initiatives over the last 3 years.
Well, wonderful. Dexter, we're going to have to end it there. Thanks so much for your time today.
Oh, it's always a pleasure, Tony, and thank you to Fed Talk for this opportunity.
Sure. Again, for more information on the EEOC's Executive Leadership Conference, go to EEOCLeadershipConference.com or you can call 202-331-0004. That's 202-331-0004. At this time, I like to shift gears a little bit and talk about another important conference that's coming up here in Washington, D.C. I'd like to bring on Kathy Sands from WIFL, Women in Federal Law Enforcement. Again, Kathy is the president of WIFL, and they, too, have an exciting leadership conference coming up in a few weeks. Hi, Kathy. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you.
Sure. Let's start by you first telling our listeners a little bit about WIFL, its history, its mission, what it does to serve women in law enforcement.
Well, WIFL actually started out as a task force with OPM in the late 70s because women had been barred from holding the positions. The first women were hired in 1971 and 72. And so the government was looking at how do they recruit and retain women. In the early 80s, that task force became the Interagency Committee on Women in Federal Law Enforcement, also known as ICWIFL. And that was between the Departments of Justice and the Departments of Treasury. And that's where we started work with the women in all of the law enforcement agencies, creating the ability to network, for the women to just meet each other. Very often at that time, there may be a handful of women on an agency, and they may not have ever met. And this gave an opportunity for them to do this. We also started providing leadership training, because if we can't change the culture of the organizations we work with, then we'll always be in this recruiting mode because we'll just keep losing people. And this is the same problem with almost any other minority in a profession. Then in 1998-99, we became a nonprofit, which is a whole new set of issues in and of itself. But we maintained the structure and the focus of what WIFL did as an interagency committee. Being a nonprofit gave us a little more flexibility in the area of conducting research. It's easier to work with people to look at women in federal law enforcement. It's not a highly researched area. I think maybe less than a dozen studies have ever been done on the subject. And so we work with that. We often enter into agreements with women that are working on their PhDs who are from the different agencies, and we've been able to get research done, not on the cheap, but without expending a lot of money or without having to try to find grants to get these things done.
Right. You know, I know particularly, you know, myself having been in Treasury and familiar with the good work that WIFL, you know, did and currently still does do, you know, both back when it was sponsored by the government and now that you're on your own as a nonprofit. I mean, you were being very kind about it. You know, the early days for women in federal law enforcement wasn't easy. You know, let's face it. You know, it was an all boy thing, and there were a lot of obstacles for women to advance, you know, in law enforcement, and the same was true, you know, for federal law enforcement. And I personally know that WIFL was very instrumental in, you know, helping a lot of the trailblazers out there, you know, women who grew up in their agency to become, you know, very well respected leaders in their respective law enforcement fields. We're going to have to stop here for our second break. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion with Kathy Sands about WIFL and its leadership conference. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
GEICO's famous for saving people money on car insurance. And now, if you're a federal employee, you could be saving even more. In fact, you may already qualify for a special federal discount from GEICO. If you're a federal employee, or if you belong to an association like BIG, FEW, FLIOA, Young Government Leaders, and many others, you could be saving hundreds of dollars. Contact GEICO today to get a quote and be sure to request your special federal savings. GEICO got its start back in 1936, specifically to serve federal employees. Today, we're still making it easy for federal employees to save money on car insurance. If you're a federal employee, you may qualify for a special federal employee discount. Or if you belong to an association like BIG, FEW, Young Government Leaders, and many others, you may also qualify. See how much you could be saving. Contact GEICO today to get a quote and be sure to request your special federal savings.
If you're a federal law enforcement officer, then you know to do your job, you tap inside sources. To have a voice on policy and legislation, you join FLIOA. And when you want federal law enforcement officer news and up-to-date federal court decisions, you read FedAgent.com. If you aren't reading FedAgent.com, subscribe today. It's free. Don't let this source pass you by. I'm John Adler, president of the Federal Law Enforcement Officers Association, and I approve this message.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Tony Vernetti, and I'm here speaking with Kathy Sands from WIFL, Women in Federal Law Enforcement. And we're going to start talking about their leadership conference. But Kathy, before you do that, why don't you let our listeners know how they can become a member of WIFL and a little bit about the benefits that it offers in addition to the wonderful training that you all put on.
Well, you can go to our website, WIFL.org, and you can become a member. We're open to both sworn and non-sworn members of federal law enforcement. You don't have to be a gun carrier to be a member. We find that being in a male-dominated agency, it doesn't matter what job you have. You can still run into some of the same issues. We will also be able to, on the August 26th, the evening of our first day of leadership training, we'll have a members-only get-together at Murphy's of D.C. near the hotel, just as an appreciation for our membership. And you can become a member then if you want to on the spot.
Sounds an awful lot like a happy hour.
It sort it is, and we're actually going to meet with another women's organization, which is Women in Security, and that's the corporate side of the world, and we're starting to work together a little bit to try to create some networking and some avenues for women that may be looking towards a second career as they're approaching retirement. Some of the information coming out on women in retirement indicates that we are going to have to work a little longer.
We all are, unfortunately. What about students? Are students folks who are in school and criminal justice programs or thinking about or planning for a career in law enforcement, are they eligible for WIFL?
Yes, we actually have a student membership, and it's about $10 a year. That goes along with our probably one of our biggest benefits for the student population is we do give scholarships. We have two types of scholarships, regular scholarships and a members-only scholarship, which is open to the student members as well as the regular members of the organization. With a members scholarship, you do not have to put in for the scholarship for yourself. So you can put in for a child, for your own child, for a niece or nephew, something like that. And our regular scholarship is open to all students who are looking for a career in law enforcement or any of the law enforcement-related fields, intelligence, probation, parole, corrections. We've even had some women who were in law school win the scholarship. So as far as that's probably one of the biggest benefits that people keep looking at. But we also have have half-hour free legal advice from Shore Brancid and Jeffrey Law Group for people that may have gotten a little sideways with their agency. And we also have relationships with feds for a lower liability insurance. Suddenly I'm going blank on all these.
Well, I can help you with feds.
Okay, yeah, I know you can.
Yeah, there are a lot of, if all you need to do is get on the website and look at the member benefits, there are a lot of associations and organizations and companies such as mine, feds, you know, that have a long, long relationship with WIFL, and you know, our partnerships go so much further than, you know, the $10 discount you get or the free, you know, half hour legal consult. These are, you know, relationships where you have partners that truly understand and care about the important work that you do and really want to, you know, provide the very best help that they can to your members. But let's talk about your annual conference coming up this in a couple weeks here. This is your 15th annual conference, and your theme is leadership at every level.
Yes. We were actually supposed to be in Tampa this year, and because of the problems for the agencies with their budgets and everything, we quickly renegotiated, and we moved to D.C. in hopes of being able to put a leadership training on that was beneficial to the agencies, that we cut the program down, just as the your previous guest was talking about, making it a shorter, leaner program for the agencies. So we focused on this theme this year, and we took advantage of being in D.C., where we have access to more of the leadership, because they can jump in quickly and jump out and not have to get on the planes. So our keynote speaker this year is going to be Loretta Lynch, the U.S. attorney from the Eastern District of New York. We will have Linda Tarr-Whalen, who will talk about stepping into leadership and changing the world. We're going to have a Women in Power panel, which is kind of an interesting. We'll be able to put Michelle Earnhardt, Stacia Hilton, and Renee Triplett, who is one of the senior leaders of the Secret Service, together on a panel to talk about issues that have been facing them as they've taken over the leadership of their agencies. We were able to have a meeting last year in which the three women heads of agency actually get to sit in a room and talk about something other than the crisis of the day,
mm-hmm.
when they usually only get to talk to each other. And they talked about things that they were facing, how they were, they shared how they were addressing different issues such as EEO. They brought up things that they thought had been handled years ago. And when they took over the helm, they found out that it hadn't. And so, you know, the surprises of leadership, you know, you get into the job and you find out it's not always the same as you thought it was going to be. Then we're going to have.
Let me say one thing about that group, because what I find really interesting with the panel you have there with Michelle Leanhart, who's of course the administrator at DEA, and Stacia Hilton, who's the director of the U.S. Marshals Service, and you have Renee Triplett, who's an executive at the Secret Service. Something that's unique about those three, and you can, you know, throw Julie Pearson and other folks in there, are, you know, none of these are political appointees. These are all career, you know, law enforcement civil servants who, you know, have grown up in their respective agencies over the past, you know, what, 25, 30 years, you know, and have seen it all, right? They've seen it all, like call from cradle to grave, you know.
They remember what it was like.
Right, and they've seen all the changes, and you know, I'm sure, you know, they have a lot of, you know, stories, you know, to share, you know, and a lot of, you know, good advice to give, because it's not all about where do we come from, you know, it's where do we go from here, you know, how do we make things better by going forward, you know. So me in particular, I find that a fascinating panel that you all were able to put together.
And all of the women are very active in instilling change in their agencies and their profession. So they're great fun to be in a room with. Not only they just have great personalities, but they are so dynamic in their leadership qualities.
Right, and something before we take our third break here, I want to mention something you mentioned about the training environment, you know, and you mentioned that you were originally supposed to be in Tampa. In fact, I even remember attending a WIFL event in Tampa about 7 years ago. And, you know, a lot of this has happened because of what happened with the GSA and VA, and you know, it's the reason, you know, training conferences such as yours and what we just talked about, you know, are trying to do things leaner and meaner, you know, and you know, the press is out there is always so quick to be critical of, you know, these sort of training events, conferences, whatever you want to call them. But what gets lost in all of this is, you know, training is mission related stuff. You know, it's training is important stuff that, you know, people, you know, need to do their job. They're doing it in the private sector. And, you know, I look at a course, you know, a leadership training program that you all are putting together. I look at the one we just talked about, you know, and these are substantive training environments that are really going to educate and empower the people, you know, that attend them. So, you know, I hope we have turned the page on that environment. You know, this is no party in Vegas. There are no clowns. There's no jugglers. You know, this is the real deal. You know, so, you know, I encourage folks who are out there who are thinking about attending, you know, and certainly people who are in leadership positions within agencies who get to approve these things, you know, I hope that you look at it, you know, through those eyes.
Well, you know, the agencies usually have an agency rep to our organization, and they work very hard on putting together the information that they believe they need. Each agency submits workshops. Not only does it highlight, you know, something specific in how their agency does it, but it's important to the profession itself. And everybody takes it very, very seriously. They know that there's not a lot of dollars, and they know that they may not be able to get to go, even though they're working on the project. We try to not only offer a way for agencies to get some of the cutting edge day-to-day important issues covered, but also some of the leadership issues that, you know, when your budget starts to get cut, the first thing you do is you cut
training.
Well, not only training, but a hierarchy of training. The last you cut is the absolute necessary operational training, but you cut all the others on top of that. And so we offer some of that training, and that, I think that helps agencies keep a leaner training team because they're getting a little more focused. And maybe it's a good thing that they rely on organizations such as us to help them meet their goals and objectives. I mean, we provide the opportunity for every agency to participate in a career fair with us. It's not the WIFL's career fair. We're just having the venue. The career fair is the agencies that come and
right.
recruit and talk to the public about their profession, the way their agency is. So we, you know, try to provide, you know, the nuts and bolts, but they really, you know, they take the career fair wherever they need it to go. And, you know, while we focus on women, and we also, you know, always want you to hire more women, and that in this environment, agency is targeting, you know, a particular type of veteran, tell them to come on to the career
fair. It's how they can, you know, fulfill a lot of their diversity requirements, which is not about quotas and things like that. It's about awareness and education, you know, and getting out there and explaining, you know, to potential candidates, you know, whether it's a woman or veteran, or some other classification, you know, it's that these, you know, here's what we're doing, you know, to remove these barriers that previously existed for folks like you. And I just think from a larger macro perspective that it's just good for, you know, folks to, you know, to get together from different agencies who have like positions, like experiences. It's, you know, it's just good for camaraderie, morale, you know, and I think, you know, all around it makes for, you know, a better group of government employees that are serving the taxpayers. We're going to stop here and hear a word from our sponsor. When we return, we'll wrap up today's discussion with Kathy Sands about WIFL and its leadership conference. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around the mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is GEICO anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that GEICO isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like GEICO. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. it's probably best to keep the name just like it is. GEICO.
To get a free rate quote, go to GEICO.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact GEICO today to request your special federal savings.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We are entering our last segment of the show. And Kathy, I think I blew right by this, but can you get our listeners some information on how they can get signed up for the leadership development training? And do you have same day signups as well?
Yes, we do. You can go to the same website, www.wiffle.org, and there's a section that you just click on for training. And it'll bring you right to the event. And you can, we do one day, we do the full time, you know, the full 2 days, or you can do it one day at a time.
Okay, and again, this is August 26th through 27th. This is here in Washington, D.C. at the Omni Shoreham. So I encourage everybody who's listening to check it out. But let's talk a little bit more about the agenda that you have scheduled and some of the other programs that you have outlined. I know there's something you guys are doing from the Navy Yard shooting.
Yes. We have Kathy Lanier and Valerie Parlave and Elizabeth Toomer from NCIS talking about the Navy Yard shooting. And the interesting thing about the Navy Yard shooting is, if you remember when it was happening, and they would do the press briefings, you would look up and see almost all women talking to the press. And even they commented on it, that, you know, they'd never seen so many women in leadership positions, you know, at such a tragic event. But so we're going to have what is it like? What do women bring anything different to this type of situation? The same thing with the Boston bombing. While you may have seen a lot of men at the press conference, behind the scenes, you know, the next in command was very often a woman. And the interesting thing about the Boston bombing is it's the real major event since 9/11. Where law enforcement did a lot of work on how do they approach and how do they work together. So unfortunately, the Boston situation was kind of a test. And we're going to listen to Carmen Ortiz, the U.S. attorney from Boston, and Deputy Superintendent Kelly Nee, and FBI ASAC Zoyberg talk about how did they coordinate the efforts in Boston?
You know, and the thing with the Boston bombing, I mean, that's the you know, the first event I can, you know, remember in recent years, you know, where after it went down, I just had a tremendous amount of confidence in what our law enforcement officials were going to do, you know, to find them, protect. And the ability for, you know, not just, you know, we're talking about women in federal law enforcement, but just a law enforcement success story in general, you know, in the post 9/11 era, where it's all about, you know, working together with different law enforcement entities and organizations, and all about information sharing. And, you know, it was, you know, I remember coming away from that thinking we've come a long way, you know, since 9/11, on how we're dealing with stuff, and just having a tremendous amount of confidence in what we're doing with this in this country as far as law enforcement is concerned.
Yes, I agree.
I know you have an awards luncheon. Can you tell us a little bit about that and who you'll be honoring?
Yes. excuse me. Every year we have our annual awards program. We have the Julie White Cross Award, which is named after Julie White Cross, was the first woman killed in line of duty, and she was a Secret Service agent. We have the Outstanding Law Enforcement Employee Award. We have the Walmart Wiffle Leadership Award, Top Prosecutor, which this year is being given to a male AUSA from South Dakota, nominated by one of the agencies. And we're going to have our very first award of excellence in the area of intelligence. And this award is named after Elizabeth Smith Friedman,
mm-hmm.
who was the first female cryptanalyst in the country. And we're talking back in Prohibition in World War One is when she started her work.
Explain for our listeners what a cryptanalyst is. I put you on the spot.
Yeah, well, I'm not 100% sure.
I only did so because I don't know.
She was involved in such things as looking for hidden meaning. She actually started out looking for hidden meaning as a student in Shakespeare.
Mm-hmm.
And that became the focal point of code breaking. And she worked on the Enigma machines, type codes in World War II. But in Prohibition, she actually became the person that sort of spearheaded what today we call fusion centers.
Okay.
She was very ahead of her time, and she actually worked for the agency that was the predecessor of ATF. So.
So did Elliot Ness.
Yeah. And then, oddly, in that era, the Coast Guard and U.S. Customs, of course, were doing the interdiction efforts. For the liquor coming across the border. And so she actually worked with both those agencies to take the intelligence gathered to target the smugglers coming in.
Interesting. And we have about a minute left. I want to ask you two quick questions. One, I wonder if you can tell us about the Flash mentoring that you all will be doing. I know that's important for, you know, people who are just getting their start in law enforcement.
The Flash mentoring, we have over 20 female executives from the different agencies that have volunteered to share their story, their challenges, their journey, their messages, and how they created opportunities or took opportunities. And Flash mentoring works a little bit like speed dating. The mentor stays seated, and anywhere from 4 to 6 women sit at the table. A subject matter is spoken about for about 20 minutes, and then that group of women gets up and moves to the next table, so they meet a new mentor. So everybody meets 4 or 5 women.
I've been associated with stuff similar, and it's really fascinating. We're gonna have to wrap up here, but real quick, where's the golf tournament being played this year?
Andrews Air Force Base.
Oh, excellent. So that's all the time we have for the show today. Thanks, Kathy, for joining us, and we hope you have a wonderful conference.
Thank you.
We also want to thank Dexter Brooks from the EEOC, who joined us earlier in the show to talk about EEOC's Executive Leadership Conference. Just a reminder that Fed Talk is brought to you by the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth, and I hope everyone has a great weekend.